Vision quest. Exhale your question out and out again into the fresh North Mountain air. See the answer all around. It waddles with leisurely curiosity on the path ahead, or drops blessed from the sky. Hear the answer in the rolling songs of the aspen trees, the rhythm of tides drumming the shore. Touch the answer with hands, feet, heart, earth, water, fire, sky, dancing with mothers, sisters, lovers, friends. Taste the answer in tender kisses of salty sea and tears, ripening fruit the earth offers, words and music on my tongue, both thanks and prayer. Embrace your question, and an answer will find you. Andrea Kieber in the Wee Moon Datebook. Welcome to this week's ritual for the Creative Spirit Circle from Bridget's Grove. And I invite you to take a pause that drops you down into your body, into your present moment awareness. Taking a nice deep breath. And letting go for a moment of the to-do list, the activities and needs of the day, and just resting right here, right now, with what is. You may wish to place one hand on your heart and one on your belly, and take another deep breath. Feeling yourself softening and easing, releasing and being. And then if you wish, you may turn to the north, wherever you are, whether you're inside a building or sitting in a chair or anywhere like that. Turn to the north and just notice what you see, hear, feel, sense, or experience in the north. And then turning to the east and noticing what you see, feel, hear, sense, perceive, or experience in the east. And then turning to the south and noticing what you see, hear, feel, sense, perceive, or experience in the south. And turning to the west and noticing what you see, hear, feel, perceive, sense, or experience in the west. And then dropping your attention back into your body, centered in your place of power. May it be a sensation in your heart, in your solar plexus, in your belly, in your pelvis. But dropping your awareness down and in, centered in your place of power, here in your time and your place. with what is right now. And then another deep breath. And reminding yourself that you can act and live from this place of power within all day long. So, I am here speaking to you today from the banks of the little creek on my family's property. And we spent the night camping in the cabin for a full moon camp out. One of the things that I had on my 100 things list for 2017 was to do full moon camping. So even though it was overcast and we couldn't actually see the moon, we decided to make that item come true before it gets too much colder and before hunting season begins and it is no longer safe to be out wandering in the woods. So that, and I decided to stay. Just the two little kids stayed with me to camp, and then I decided to stay here by the creek and do our ritual recording outdoors by the creek today. So if you notice any background sounds, that is because I am sitting here by the water, which you might be able to hear. Or you might not be able to hear it. I'm never sure how much background sound this will pick up. But there's also the breeze moving through the birch trees. There's a lot of river birches that grow here, and they don't grow anywhere else except for by the creek and by the river. And so before we had such a intimate relationship with a waterway, I was not even aware of the river birch trees. And now they are part of our lives, and watching the sunlight come through the bark is awesome. And then I'm also hearing the sound of the wind in the last leaves on the sycamore trees, which is another tree that grows by the waterways and not in the general forest by our house. So I'm enjoying spending some time with birch and sycamore and creek and stone today as I speak to you. So, and I hope I went out for a walk this morning to collect materials for the mandala that I was going to create for the ritual. And as I was looking at the seed pods and picking some colorful leaves, and I returned with my little pouch full of treasures from the forest, and I felt just this sense of exhilaration and joy. And I know I speak of the everyday magic concept, but you know, it's everyday magic to me to notice the red leaf and the gold leaf and the stripy little pointy leaves and the large leaves of the sycamore, and to just be in contact with them. And so I had this sense of exhilaration coming back with my little pouch of treasure and my little kids, and I wish for you to make space in your life for the things that exhilarate you. And maybe I am a simple soul that finding a really nice big sycamore leaf just makes my heart sing. Maybe for you it is sewing or singing or creating or working with clay or dancing or sitting with your loved ones or playing games or walking or running in a marathon or anything. It doesn't have to be sitting by the creek with your sycamore leaf. That's mine. That brings me exhilaration. It is yours may be completely different. So please don't feel like there's only one right way to delight in everyday magic or to feel exhilaration. But my sense when I was coming back and I was thinking about this time that we will have together in this ritual space, I wished for you all the opportunity to feel exhilarated by the everyday magic that surrounds you and exhilarated by what touches your heart with mystery, with meaning, and with magic. So that's my wish. And then I chose our rune of the week, and we received, from Woman Runes, we received the wand, which is the rune of blessing, making sacred, honoring, calling in, sending forth. And I love getting this rune, particularly when I'm about to hold a ceremony or a ritual. It always feels like a blessing in and of itself. So the rune of blessing then blesses whatever it is that I'm working on when it shows up. So I enjoyed seeing it today. But then what the attention that it caught for me. So usually when I experience this rune, I think of it very much about like, how does this connect? What are we blessing? What are we making sacred? What are we honoring? What ceremony and rituals are you creating? What are you working on in this sense of the sacred? Today, my attention was caught by the secondary meanings, that setting forth, that making marking boundaries, that the way that the wand can be used to cast the circle to create a safe space and to protect. So rather than the act of blessing, rather that act of protection and boundary marking and identifying. So I was thinking about that aspect of the wand. But also, this rune is about both calling in and sending forth. So I would offer you the opportunity to think about, what are you calling in? What are you drawing to you? What are you attracting? What are you bringing into your life lately? And then also, what are you sending forth? What are you sending out? Sometimes I feel like I am sending out like more agitation or frustration or being pulled in a lot of directions. So sometimes I feel like I'm sending out more fragmentation than I would like to send out. And so there's this intimate relationship between the calling in and the sending out. So if you're calling in peace and calm and ease and flow and light and understanding, what are you sending forth? And so we can send forth that, we can, you know, ground or release that which is not working for us. But I think we have to be aware and mindful of that we're sending out also those things that we're calling in. So if I want to call in peace and serenity, I would also like to offer that out. So I would like to both call in and send forth those things that I desire. So I was thinking about that with relationship to the wand as well. And just inviting you to consider, what are you calling in? What are you sending forth? And then I would like to talk briefly about this idea of the wand as a rune of marking boundaries, of establishing boundaries. I'm still reading the 12 Wild Swans book that I've referenced several times in recent rituals. So the 12 Wild Swans, A Journey to the Realm of Magic, Healing, and Action, which is by Starhawk and Hilary Valentine. And as I've noted, in case you haven't listened to what I've noted before, this book uses the story of the 12 wild swans, the folk tale of the 12 wild swans and the sister who rescues her brothers who've been turned into swans by spinning nettles into fiber to make shirts for them. And only when she's finished all 12 shirts and thrown them over the backs of the 12 swans will her brothers be restored to her. And so the whole book uses that story as a metaphor, a myth, a framework for understanding yourself and your own journey through life and through your own personal magic. So in this section where I am now, it's on page 218, she is speaking of the testing that healers and priestesses and shamans and doctors and therapists, the testing or ordeal that people go through in order to emerge on the other side transformed. And she writes of the healers need to be able to bear pain and to be able to witness suffering and to hold space for suffering. And she notes that to be calm and confident in the face of suffering, we must have tasted some of it ourselves. So the rose who's weaving the nettle shirts, she's bearing the pain of the nettles on behalf of her brothers, of the service that she's rendering to her brothers. Therapists have to bear the pain their clients bring. Doctors have to withstand the suffering of their patients. And they also note that the goddess tradition never asks for self-abnegation, nor do we promote asceticism. So there's no glorifying of needless suffering or of denying. One of the things that I've always liked about goddess traditions and goddess spirituality is that it is not seen as a virtue to deny your body. There's that in some spiritual traditions, there's that need to transcend the body or overcome the body or move away from the body or even just transcend the body. So, ascending and transcending, and then our bodies are often treated like these. You know, people even say things like that. They call their body their meat suit, or say that they're just a spiritual being having a human experience, or this body is just something we wear for a while. It doesn't really matter. And in a goddess worldview, your body matters a lot. And listening to your body and hearing your body and being in your body instead of trying to get out of it or transcend it or leave it behind, or treating the earthly, the physical, the fleshy, the bloody, the messy, the embodied, the holy, richly embodied experience of life. That's it. This is where it's at. Feeling your body on this earth and what you are experiencing in your body. That matters. And so leaving behind the body, letting go of the body or treating it like it's incidental or doesn't matter. And then even in some traditions, abusing the body or denying the body, not eating, not sleeping, doing things to your body in order to somehow transcend this earthly limit, that is in many ways rejected by a goddess worldview or goddess philosophy or goddess spirituality. That we love the soft animals of our bodies, and we love feeling the wind in our hair and the sun on our eyelids and running your hands through the water and caressing the people that you love and feeling the weight of a stone in your hand and the joy of finding an antler in the forest that you can hold and picking up shells and a very much an in the body life. So that's my little sub thing. So outside of the quote I was actually talking about. And so in goddess traditions, we're not talking about leaving the body behind or transcending the body or elevating away from the body. The body is this rich source of wisdom and love and experience and everyday magic right there. So, but then she also points out, and I love Starhawk's writing because I feel like she's really able to navigate a type of dualism without making it dualistic. Like, both are necessary. So we love being in our bodies. We love taking care of our bodies and caring for ourselves and having a rich, embodied, earthly, beautiful, messy, bloody, magical experience. And taking good care of ourselves and treating our bodies as temples of life. But then also understanding that sometimes we suffer and bear pain along with that. It's not an easy answer. It's not like you choose one right thing and then you never experience the hard stuff. It's all there. And so she says, to gather true power, fortitude is necessary. So that means sometimes enduring, sometimes experiencing. So we're not actively seeking opportunities to harm oneself or to bear pain. However, the fortitude of moving through painful experiences is key. They don't have to be abandoned or dismissed as, negative thinking. In some New Age type of philosophies, there's that think only positive and only love and light and the law of attraction type things where the only thing, if you're basically the shadow side being that if you're just doing it correctly, if you're just thinking correctly, then nothing bad is going to happen. And so she says, a midwife stays through the duration of a birth. She can't simply yawn halfway through and say, I'm tired, I'm going to take care of myself and go home. Taking care of ourselves has become something of a New Age watchword. Many of us have indeed learned that unless we take care of ourselves, we have nothing to offer anyone else, and that too much focus on fixing other people may be a way of maintaining their disease and avoiding looking at our own problems. But to learn magic, to gather power, is also to sometimes push ourselves, to test our limits, and to go beyond our zone of comfort and ease. So I have often said that self-care, and using the phrase self-care, can sometimes be a beautiful, wonderful, needed thing. It can also have a shadow side in that it's being used as a way to expect too little of yourself, or to let other people down, to fail to live up to your commitments or your obligations. Oh, I'm just taking care of myself. And really that just means you're not doing something that you should be doing, because doing things sometimes that you don't want actually is what needs to happen. And that can be true of life or of spiritual development or anything. So they go on to say, part of the work is exploring the balance. How do we know when we are being truly generous or simply codependent? When are extraordinary efforts really called for, and when are we simply in a workaholic pattern? What are the ordeals that expand and empower us, and when are we falling into the age-old women's pattern of putting everybody else's needs before our own? So I find those important questions to consider in my own life, and perhaps you will find them important questions to consider in your life as well. But when are you generous, and when is it codependence? When is it extraordinary effort, and when is it self-abuse in the form of workaholism? When is it moving through your ordeal of life triumphantly, and when is it falling into this pattern of taking care of everyone else and not taking care of yourself? And so that is that's what's been on my mind today, thinking about what I can, you know, realistically offer in a way that still creates its own spiritual or developmental challenge for me without running myself ragged and draining myself of resources and power. So when does the hard work build power, and when does it drain power, and the discernment between the two? So, this really does relate to the wand, because that whole honoring, marking your boundaries, calling in and sending forth. And there's a little bit more about boundaries here. There's a little snippet further on that says, a person of power must be able to withstand jealousy. A weaver of souls must be able to focus on the work without being swayed by other people's perceptions, whether it is idolization or vilification. When we find our voice and speak our truth, not everyone is going to like what we have to say, especially if we are truly weaving something new. So, what are you weaving that is new? And what courage and power does it take to continue to do that weaving, even if other people reject it? And continuing in the vein of boundary setting, there's some notes about shielding and anchoring oneself, and I like they describe a shield as being like a priestess cloak. And so in some contexts, your cloak is a very thin and light cloak, and that's enough. With other people, you have to have a very thick cloak. And it is important not to take too much personally when you are priestessing. It can be very ungrounding, so the cloak can take it instead. And this is the example, this priestess that she's writing about named Pomegranate. She says, one day I talked to two different people in my role as priestess. The first told me I had saved her life. Within a few hours, I was consulting with a person who felt I was failing her. Because I was wearing my priestess robe, I was able to remember that both people were talking to the priestess archetype. The robe holds the big energies that are necessary for people to do their magical work and reflects the power that people bring to the work. Meanwhile, inside the robe, the human-sized me can stay grounded and focused on each person's situation and avoid getting pulled into their energy. In addition, I can take human-scale responsibility for people's progress. So, if we are not going to take responsibility for other people's failures or criticisms, so to speak, of the work we are doing, we also need to remember not to be too inflated by the positive perceptions of the work we are doing, because in many ways, both things are outside of us, and we can do the best that we can to put forth our most true and most authentic effort. And for some people, it will not be enough. And for other people, it will be too much. And sometimes it will be, you will be both of those things all at once, both too much and not enough. And I think, again, in pop culture type of self-help, new agey type things, there's that notion that, you know, you are enough and you're always enough. And I've written and said it myself too, but sometimes you actually won't be enough for something or for someone else, and sometimes you will be too much, and both of those have to be okay, because there's no avoiding it, that at some point, at some time, you will be both. And reading that section about the priestess cloak and having it be thin sometimes and thick sometimes is what you needed, I was thinking about, I don't keep up with that blog anymore, but for 10 years I wrote a blog called Chalk Birth that's all about conscious pregnancy, birth, parenting, breastfeeding, etc. Some of the people in this circle are still with me after having followed that blog for a number of years and following what I was doing as I've kind of evolved into a different work after birth work. But I remember I wrote a blog post about this very phenomenon, the being everything to everyone, essentially, because in the same day or the same week, I received a message from someone telling me that one of the essays I had written had touched her profoundly and it made this huge difference in her life, and how it felt like I just completely understood her and was speaking exactly what she needed to hear, and etc. And then I got another message from a different person saying that I was so judgmental and narrow and could never understand anybody's perspective, and basically how could I be so close. So when I read that, it was like, when I read both of them, it was a nice reminder that how we are often we are not in control of how we are perceived by others. So all we can do is keep doing our work. And then how it is received or experienced, we can be mindful of that, but how it is received or experienced is not always in our own hands. And so what I reflected is that I am both too much and not enough. I am both expansive and broad and understanding and compassionate and touching people's souls, and I am narrow and shut down and judgmental and forgetful, or whatever it is that I can have. Those both can be there, and somebody's experience of me, somebody can experience that part of me, and someone else can experience another part of me, and I can experience a part of me myself, but it's all there in the brew. And so I thought of that when I read about her priestess cloak. And then, I promise I'm almost done with my little message here, but they also write that, and I liked this explanation of boundaries, that our boundaries are both an edge that protects us and a sensory organ that lets us know when we are encountering other people's edges. So we can feel our edge, but then our edge has to be able to feel and perceive other people's edges. So to have good boundaries is to be able to acknowledge the limits of your power and responsibility, to respect other people's privacy, and to know what is yours and what is not yours. And other people's projections can be easily throw us into either inflation or deflation unless we have a clear sense of ourselves and our own boundaries and our own what actually belongs to us. And so I thought that was a helpful reminder and experience as well when I think about the wand for this week. So that is where I leave you now. And I don't have my little bell with me that I usually chime, because I'm at the river and I did not pack my little bell, in case you wondered what happened to that. And let me see. I have another little quote from Wee Moon to close our circle for today. And It is called Fixing the Flowing World. So, this bright trickle, love, it still cuts stone, breaking ever new ground in the monumental valley of our conflicted sentiments. Each drop of love's flow is a diamond, rolling through and cutting the towering rocks of our collective habits of mind, making fertile ground again, grounds for something new. And that is from Anne Benvenuti in We Moon. And so this week, may you be aware of what you are calling in and sending forth. May you be mindful of tending to your authentic self and to the health and beauty of your body. And may you exercise wise discernment, healthy boundaries, and embrace the exhilaration of being here on this earth. Thank you, and many blessings to you all.